Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio, day 2, E3, 2018. Rob Zachney just opened a beer.
Day 5.
Day 17.
Yeah.
E3 is over again. Congratulations. We've made it.
We've always been at war with E3. Danielle Riendo, Austin Walker, Rob Zachney, Patrick Klepek joining you again. Natalie Watson on the wheels. Danica will be joining us a little bit later. I don't know where Joel is.
Joel was resting and eating.
But yes. Not in our vicinity.
No.
Just in L.A., in the ether of L.A.
Joel's doing well. Like, Joel is not in this Airbnb situation. Joel's got, like, a nice place he can go back to and, like you know, find restorative activities.
There's a gym there. There's a 24-hour gym at his nice hotel.
So. You know what? These streets run 24 hours.
I ran this morning. I ran to Lincoln Park.
Did you run into our ice cream truck friend?
Yeah, no, I ran to... Ooh. I was stuck in my head the whole time.
I mean, there's still a band.
There's still a band. I just hadn't thought about it in a while.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's all right. I was thinking, you know, I had Lincoln Park stuck in my head as I ran around Lincoln Park. It was actually delightful at like 6:45.
Nice.
Or just 7. It was like 7:15.
Awesome. So we have a bunch of games to talk about again today. Probably less than yesterday. I'm going to try to keep this one to a tight couple of hours and a heads up.
tight couple of hours. That's not... Sure, that's a phrase. Fine. Whatever.
You ain't recorded enough podcasts with me yet, apparently.
Austin
2 hours
Walker,
is nothing.
Gaming's most laconic personality.
I'm just like, listen, what do you got, a day? Give me two. I'm out here to podcast.
Give me two now.
Any two.
Austin's podcasting warms up around 4 in the morning.
That's about right.
L.A. Austin.
That's 100% true.
That's New York Austin.
New York Austin. Doesn't.
You're
right. Yeah, the podcaster who never sleeps.
Yep.
We're going to have a bunch of stuff to go through today. We're going to hit the big things. We're going to save some stuff again for either tomorrow or Monday. But let's start with you, Danielle. Let's give me some little things, and then we'll focus in on one big thing. What's some of the small stuff that you got a chance to see today?
Small
stuff is not fair. I'm not trying to diss these other games. It's show and tell, right?
It's show and tell.
And we get to also have some other things that we're showing, but then what are we telling? So what are your shows,
what are we
and then
telling?
We'll figure
what
out
we
a tell.
What are we telling? I had 2 interviews and I had a couple of hands-on sessions. What do you want to hear about?
What do you want to tell us about?
I'm curious, given how excited you were about The Last of Us.
Yes.
And specifically the moment in The Last of Us.
It was a moment.
You had a chance to...
The kiss.
There was the kiss.
Hot kiss.
A good one. Well,
it's getting less hot.
I don't know. She's, you know, some people, that's how they kiss. We cannot judge the kiss.
Is this how they got kissed fully?
Probably, actually.
Oh. Okay.
Natalie took her headphones off.
Natalie could not deal with what was going on.
That's a good preview
there.
Of how this podcast is going to go over.
Natalie took her headphones off and threw them.
But you interviewed someone at Naughty Dog.
Yes.
Set us up for that. What did you talk about?
Yeah, of course. So I had the little demo, which was really just the same exact thing that we all saw at the Sony press event. And then I got to talk to Neil Druckmann and Hallie Gross, I believe is her
she's
last
the
name.
She's the head writer.
She's the co-writer. I think co-writer. He's still the sort of creative
the way they,
director.
The way they name things.
Co-writer.
There is a creative director who is Neil Druckmann, but then there are two co-directors underneath him. And then there's also
co-writer.
Her.
I believe she's, at least in the email that I have,
that's
she's
not how
credited
hierarchies
as co-writer.
Work.
So I don't.
Companies.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Companies are weird. But I had a lovely interview with them. It was quick but good. It was really, really awesome. You know, I sort of introduced myself. I mean, you have met them before.
Sure.
But, you know, it was just like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. That was a big, exciting gay moment. Queer moment, rather. Maybe fair.
Sure.
Guess fair so. To all the queer. All the queer. And they had some really good quotes. I'll share a couple of quick little tidbits. I'm going to probably write a piece about this. But it was a pretty good little interview. You know, I asked, like, oh, that was a big moment. That was a big thing to kind of open on. That's, like, the first game, really, that they were showing at Sony. And they open on a big kiss. Well, They don't open on the big kiss. They open on they the build. Lead up to the big kiss.
It's like a crescendo of the trailer.
Yeah. So I asked them, I was like, oh, you know, kind of how long did that take to really get right? I was like, were you working on that for like weeks? And they were like,
how many times?
Months.
Do you have, how much footage of the kissing do you have?
I was like,
will it get its own Blu-ray?
Yeah, exactly. What directorial issues do you have here? But like they, you know, they said like, oh, we knew this was a big moment. Basically, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit.
Sure.
This is a really, really big moment. And what they really wanted to show was Ellie at both her most confident, her most competent, her most bad, you know, killing people. She lives in a violent world and she's able to, you know, be successful in this violent world. And also at her most awkward and off center and really sort of like adorably awkward, basically, you know, referring to the kiss and referring to her being like, oh no, they're not looking at me. They're looking at you, you know, the way she sort of delivers her lines and then the way she kind of blushes when they kiss and things like that. And they thought that was like a really strong way to like, you know, show the themes of this game, because this game is apparently very much about Ellie and, you know, her different sides of being a violent kind of monster in this world and also being a person who wants to pursue romance and is awkward and is still fairly young at this point.
Right, how old is she at this moment?
19 was thrown around. Okay. I heard 19. I'm not going to like stick them to the pole of 19, but they said 19 at one point. So she's sounds very like, young still, certainly. Yeah, she's totally of age, but she's
just because
very
you
young.
Some context for what the jump is from Last of Us to here.
Yeah.
Given that
5 years, 4 years, maybe.
Say, yeah, she was maybe 15.
Yeah.
Maybe
14.
Yeah, somewhere in there. But she was a teen. She was like a mid-teen.
Yeah.
So
she's a young adult at this point, basically.
Interesting. Did they kind of develop any more about like what I mean, so I saw a demo at Sony yesterday, and that was like the same gameplay demo, but they talked about some stuff. So what were some of the other points that they were bringing up, I guess, during that entire thing? Like, were they talking through it, or they just kind of let it
they
play?
They just showed it. Just let it play.
Okay.
And then I got that interview. Okay. So I went and see the other little room, and we chatted about it.
It's weird. It's so weird.
Anything else notable that they mentioned?
Yeah, they talked about the kissing tech. They talked about the mocap tech a little bit. And again, I don't want to throw it all out here, but like, generally, Neil Druckmann was talking about just that they have improved the technology for facial capture and have more, you know, sort of points on the mocap. And they
there's
actually
a photo floating around of Shannon Woodward and who's the actress that plays Ellie?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
The actress that plays Ellie.
Yes.
I only know Shannon Woodward because I've been watching Westworld.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, there's one where you see all the points of articulation and motion capture, and it's just
it's a lot.
It's amazing to see because you just see this finished product and then it's like, look at all these, you know,
dots.
It's very cyberpunk, actually. It's very funny. 100%. Andy McClure said something really cute about like, that's a cyberpunk fantasy right there. These like kind of robot looking, you know, girls kind of doing this, but very, very funny. But apparently they have special technology that I won't go into the techno speak of, where like more soft points is the way they put it, like just more articulation points on the face and the lips. There's
like
a specific thing about the lips,
sure,
and that Ellie's lips are a tiny bit wet at the end of the kiss, and that was very much like something they worked on to make sure it like looked just right.
You would have to, right? Like, we spent some time earlier around the Mass Effect Andromeda stuff talking about how badly we wanted sex scenes to not be terrible in video games, and like kissing is just as hard as anything else in a sex scene or any sort of romantic physical interaction. Kisses are super complicated in terms of soft parts of bodies touching each other. It's hard to have,
it's something that everyone is so intimately familiar with.
Yes.
What it is like, sex you can cut away. People have different kinds of sex. Yes. Like kissing is like a fairly straightforward,
common, intimate action type of intimacy.
And when you see it wrong, it's why it's never convincing in video games.
Games are already bad at showing people like drink from cups.
Right.
Kissing, walk upstairs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kissing is this whole other thing. So good kiss.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they were willing to talk about that.
They emphasize a lot of that. Like, if any part isn't really right, it'll take you way out. And this was so important. Yeah. It was so important to get this right that they really did that. Also, they did kissing Foley because apparently the kissing sounds. It was definitely Patrick right here.
Do not start.
They're going to use that in the final game. Right there. Natalie's
Don't,
ready.
Hey. No. No.
Very good. So that was really cool. I'll probably write that up because I thought that was pretty fun. A lot of little tidbits in there. It's
more information than I learned from the trailer.
And then I would have learned from going to that event and sitting through the trailer a second time, apparently.
Yeah.
So. Cool. Anything else?
Yeah, I saw Captain Spirit with Patrick, actually.
That is the Life is Strange anthology adventure thing. That's a little kid.
It's a two-hour long-ish, you're saying an hour and a half, two-hour long free game. It's going to come out on the 26th.
Yep.
They kept emphasizing that. And they very much wanted it to be sort of like an entry point for people who, you know, maybe didn't play the first game or maybe they heard about the first game and or sort of a gift to fans. That was something we heard a couple times. Like, this is a gift to fans. And in the demo that we watched, it's very much about this young boy. His name is Chris. He's about 10. And he has this wild imagination, and it looks obviously a lot like a Life is Strange game. You're walking around in third person with all these little prompts of like,
okay,
look at this, touch this, you know, only he has a new way of interacting with things, which is his powers as Captain Spirit.
Right.
So yeah, he imagines himself as a superhero. So
there's a situation where there's a like closet door that's dark that leads to like the water heater. And he doesn't like to go in there. He's afraid of that room.
Same.
Yeah.
But when he uses his once you've built your Captain Spirit costume, he gains powers and it's a power of like it gives him courage.
Right.
And so there's a button to hold down to use his powers, and then he channels his powers, opens the door, goes and like flips on the water heater, and like that's part of the way they're using.
That's cute.
Sort of like the imagination of the kid. In our interview, Daniel had this great question to ask, like, well, You know, wouldn't be surprising if you were moving away from the supernatural stuff. Like, what's sort of the thing? They're like, well,
imagination is his superpower. It was like the way they coyly,
but also sort of it seemed there was some wink, wink, nod, nod.
Yeah,
play the game.
Don't nod.
Play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Play the game. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that was cool.
I'm curious how you read this one. The question that we only had like a chance for like four questions at the interview. So one of the ones we touched on was like bringing up like the role that Life is Strange has played in sort of like queer representation and the fact that the queer community was like the most vocal community about that game. And so like the way I phrased the question was, you don't necessarily have to have another queer relationship, but clearly that community is important as a pillar of Life is Strange fandom. How are you thinking about that thematically when you are, Life is Strange 2 is going to get announced in a couple of months, is what he said, so that we'll have a better understanding of like what that is. And his answer was real
meandering
and strange, and I wasn't sure how to take it. Like the gist of his answer
that sounds bad.
Well, the gist of his answer was not particularly well acknowledging the premise of the question, which is that like the queer community was really important. Like he mentioned, like, oh, we're thankful that it found a lot of fandoms, including the queer community, but. And the butt's always like, you know, that makes you nervous. You're saying like, well, you know, what we think sort of like holistically, the appeal of Life and Strange was about like grounded relationships in which people could relate to the characters, which is not untrue, right? Like that is not, that is, as you know, myself, I'm not queer. Like part of my appreciation of Life and Strange was the fact that the characters were like relatable and interesting and like understandable teenagers. But it's impossible to ignore that other side. And his answer is basically like, well, and we're going to continue doing things like that in the sequel, which doesn't necessarily...
things like that as in...
Relatable, grounded characters, but not explicitly about queer relationship. And so that could be in the game. That could be him being worried about spoilers for a game that they have not announced. But I think I was just telling you, Austin, when I was sort of like relaying my frustration to him while we were getting in the cab, I was like, I wish there had been a little more acknowledgement up front of like, even if the second game is not going to have that at the center, to just be like, this game wouldn't be where it was without those people.
Yes.
And the queer community was invaluable to the fandom on like Tumblr and places like that to developing the community around Life is Strange.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I go back and look at my Twitter threads when I'm like reacting to all this stuff, and I definitely were like, where the hell's Chloe? Like I said something like, where are the lesbians? Oh my God, what the hell's going on? Because I thought this was Life is Strange too. When the trailer came up and when I was like, oh, it's a side story, I kind of, took a step back and was like, okay, all right. You know, we can tell this other story too. Just, I better get some queer ladies in Life is Strange too, or queer dudes, or like something. Right. Like for sure. I definitely like want to not hold their feet to the fire because I don't want to make it like that. I don't want to make it shitty in any way. But like, yeah, that's a really important part of that game. That is absolutely why, and also why the pseudo sequel, the prequel, the
Before the Storm.
Before the Storm, the game that came out last year, which again we had labor issues with. Don't want to ever mention it without saying that, but like
I interviewed those create well, yeah. One, that story is like whereas like the original Life is Strange is the queerness of the relationship is like sort of player choice driven.
Very much so.
Whereas Before the Storm, that is it's not subtext, queer. It's not choice, it is text of
those
the game.
Qualities yes. of those characters as written.
And I interviewed the lead creative on that game at E3 last year mm-hmm. and asked a very similar question about sort of representation and how are you handling the queerness, is it going to be text or subtext? And like he gave the answer you're looking for.
Which I remember this.
Was acknowledging like this game does not exist without like those communities. Yeah. Like that is going to be now. Granted, they were making a prequel in which like the relationship between Chloe and Amber, right? Amber.
Yes.
Yeah. Was like central.
Rachel
so it's
Amber.
Like,
but yeah.
Rachel Amber. But he did the thing where it's like upfront acknowledging the community and its importance in the fandom. And I just found, people are tired, but I found the
he
answer.
He did seem tired.
Yeah, he was kind of losing his place and his thoughts every once. But like, it sort of bummed me out. Like, I thought there was a better way to, even if they want to tell their own story, I get it. I wish that had come with a little more acknowledgement of the
right. Yeah, absolutely, of that absolutely. I'm like happy to have this story be about Chris and his dad. Like I'm very very happy for that. I'm happy for Life is Strange to look at other characters and look at other like very universal experiences. But yeah, like the thing being like, hey, number one fans, love you guys would be that would help.
Oh man, I was having a rough time watching that demo because like one of my like reoccurring nightmares is like something was to happen to my wife. Like what it would be like to like raise a kid on your own and like the idea of like having to go through like the grieving process while also raising a kid. And like on the verge of tears during most of the demo because like it is like a personal nightmare of mine of like not that I necessarily think I'd become an alcoholic, but like things express themselves in different ways. And it's just like I'm just sitting there going like, fuck, man, like Jesus Christ, like I have had this actual nightmare and woken up in sweat over this whole thing. And so I think it's an interesting sort of setup, a relationship. And also for you to be the kid as opposed to
the dad.
The parent, father. Right?
And he seems like a good dad. That's the thing that's like so important about it. He's not just like a David Cage shitty dad kind of thing who like ignores the kid and whatever. It's
that's
like,
why I was on the verge of tears.
With the kid.
Yeah.
He's like drinking a lot before breakfast, but also he's playing with the kid. He's trying to go in with his like, Captain Spirit fantasies. Like he's clearly a good dad who's
struggling.
He loves
his son.
He loves his son. Right. Yeah. Which is really important, I think. So.
And I will say, as much as the answer on sort of queerness was a little disappointing, this will be in a feature we're going to run in the next couple of weeks, but like he had a really good answer about labor practices and crunch. And I will say, just to summarize, his answer was basically like, if you build a studio that like says we don't have to have crunch, it's a lot easier to avoid crunch, which is like...
You make it like a pillar.
To acknowledge that as... like an issue, something to talk about is I thought was important because that was a lot further than a lot of other developers we've talked to this week. So.
Right.
It seemed very genuine and thoughtful too, which I think a lot of things, with body language, when you're in the room, it's helpful.
Yeah,
because obviously we don't always get that. We're also often on the phone when we do interviews.
He paused a lot looking for the words.
He was like, let me get this right kind of thing. It was very genuine.
I was in a conversation talking with a dev or someone in the industry today who was saying that they recently applied to a job at a major publisher, a studio rather, and was told during the interview that they would be expected to work weekends. And it's like, when that's the starting point in a case like that, you don't have rhetorical recourse to bring it up later, right? It's like what we said in the interview.
You signed on the dotted line knowing we told you this.
You knew what you were in for.
Whereas
like
with this studio, if they say from the jump, this is a topic we know we'll slip up here and there. We know there will be spikes in work. There will be weekends where demos need to get done before, timelines or whatever. But crunch is not a thing we need to do. Then again and again, you're in a position of strength when bringing it up because you can hold these people's feet to the fire and you can say, you said this was important and it is important to you. And if it is important to you, then we can work towards a solution. Instead
but
of
acknowledge
like
that you slipped up.
Right.
So, exactly. And one nice contrast between, I don't think we got a really mixed answer when we asked the creative director of Dying Light 2 about this. He was also the creative director of Dying Light and Dead Island, all games that I like. But he started by kind of falling back on the passion argument.
Mm.
Right. And one of the things I pushed back on was like, oh, right. I mean, but if someone's like working nights and weekends, like at some point, as a creative lead, like maybe it's your responsibility to step in and be like, this is good enough. Or like, we can get back to this on Monday. And he didn't seem to think that was his role.
Right.
To that, I had a similar conversation with some Creative Assembly developers today. Huh. And they actually brought that exact thing up. They were like, look, we're a passionate team, and like a lot of people do want to put in a little extra time to make something just right or like follow up on a brainstorm. But as managers,
right.
it's on us also to make sure that people Go are home. Not feeling there's a expectation or pressure on them
right.
When they're not feeling that.
Right. And the Life is Strange guy also seemed like part of my, you know, part of his job is to like know those boundaries, like to let people have the creative freedom if they like. I do stuff on weekends. Sure. I do stuff at night. Yeah. But to know, like, when is it getting toxic, and when is it allowing someone to have a creative
right,
moment?
Right. There are plenty of times where I've seen people working late because they're trying to finish a draft, and that's like,
or you're in a rhythm. You're it's just like rhythm. The words are coming,
and there
whatever.
Are plenty of times when it has been you and me in the office, and we both have to be like, no, we have to go home.
Yep.
And we have to. We can't. They can't happen. You know. So it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
And it is about fine. It isn't about. Completely
it's not like an there's no equilibrium. It's right. more just like yeah. understanding where the lines are and right. making recognizing when people are crossing.
Yep, 100%. Yes. Anything else that you
yeah,
saw?
Tomb Raider. Awesome. I played Shadow of the Tomb Raider. It might have been the same demo you got.
Pretty
in fact,
sure.
Probably.
You go into the temple and
went
find
into
the
that
thing,
time.
And
went
and
underwater
apart.
And there was an eel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. That eel bar. Pretty good.
That was real good. I jumped a little.
Yeah, I did.
Nice. Even though it's E3, it's loud. You know, there's a lot of other things going on. I still was like, ah, eel.
I played those games, right? And yeah. liked them before.
Love okay, it. Well, cool. The second one, to be clear, I didn't actually play the first one. But the second one,
you should go
loved.
Back and still play the first one. The second one is better. Like, it's more the open or semi-open world and crafting stuff.
With those really good, the puzzle dungeons really made it for me.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And it seems like even though the bit in this demo is like tomb focused, and it's not particularly good like tomb, they have said
it feels very like
they have said like that's supposed to be like one of the pillars of this new game is like it's unfortunate using the word like you know tomb and raiding, but like what they're essentially trying to say is like we're gonna give you some of the, like the puzzle rooms that you want, like scaling things, and like I really like that stuff in the second game, and so having that as a huge focus in the third one is like. Cool. Exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. Yes, very much so. That's like what I'm here for. It's like, you know, a lot of platforming, a lot of traversal stuff, a lot of, you know, kind of like messing around and figuring out the puzzles. And also they did show, I don't know if you got the sort of extended demo, because I got a demo and then I got the play session.
I wonder if you saw
going through the town.
Yeah. ITT.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the demo that I got like last month.
All right, so I probably got the exact same thing. But
what did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's colorful, certainly. I do want to know how much of it is going to cross into slightly weird territory. Like, with her in the dress of like the people there. That's the part that is a little, like, right. Like I get the mask thing because you contextualize that for me, where
when she's in, like,
the reason why she puts the mask
the Mexican
on.
Town.
She's in the Mexican town. She's, like... hiding in a crowd.
Yeah,
which,
I'm still
like,
not. I
want to
be clear. I'm not like I'm not giving that a pass.
No. You know I'm not saying anybody should give it a pass. I'm just saying there was at least context at some level of that, but there isn't for her wearing the dress. Like not the dress, but like the dress of the people there. It's like
right.
You can still wear your little, you know, tactical pants here. Like you didn't need to necessarily do one of those.
Danica, do you want to check your phone?
It seems like it's fine. Oh. I'm watching it on my phone.
Right.
It looks weird, but
looks
I think
little,
it's still going.
It looks a
that sure
weird.
Looks like it's. Dead from over
yeah, here. But I'm watching us live.
Okay. Watching us live. Maybe something.
You
maybe
had a phone
app,
call, is what happened?
Maybe an app needed to happen.
Well, maybe we're.
We're maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline.
Could be.
I don't know. Anyway.
What time is it on this recording right now?
24:20. I'll just finish my thought with I'm interested in that game. I love that second one. I loved it's just a good video game ass video game. That's what I've been saying. Like it's really well paced. It's very, very fun to play. It feels good to play. But I am very curious about those sort of like racial elements, like for sure. I would like to see how that lands.
And we are back with our day two E3 impressions. Was that right?
Day two E3.
Actually, we're not doing this. We're just going to come straight back in, right?
Yeah.
That was the plan, because I didn't throw it a break.
Too late now.
We didn't do a break.
It's not. Awesome. So, I also saw some stuff today at E3, the second day of E3, 2018.
Second day.
I saw Zone of the Enders, which is the Zone of the Enders Mars, which is the remaster of the Zone of the Enders
not
Second
a
Runner. Not a remake. Second Runner. I thought from the first, like, 5 minutes, I was like, I don't know if it holds up, but it absolutely holds up. The mech designs are so good. The combat, it's like, for people who haven't played it, it kind of becomes a cool, very light fighting game around some of the bosses where you're kind of moving in and out of, or kind of close and far range combat. And, like, fighting game's too strong. Right? You're not hitting button combos, but you are kind of clashing
it's
in
like
the
It's
like
a
sky.
Rhythm and a finesse.
It's such a rhythm, yeah.
It's a lot of, like, locking on one-on-one sort of
yes,
duels.
Yes, while other stuff is happening all around you. And it looks gorgeous on PC, 4K. Mm-hmm. It's out later this year.
He didn't direct that. He just, like, produced it, right?
I don't remember. It has a very Kojima vibe.
No, I remember the only reason those games existed was because he was like, I want to make a mech game. And then I believe the mech designs were done by the same Yoji.
I think that's true. You know what? Like, as someone who likes that series, I have been detached from it for so long because it hasn't been available in a way that, like, has been really easily accessible for me.
Well, there was, like, the PS3 update collection.
Yes, the HD collection, but it ran like shit. Yeah. And so I just never got it. And so now it's going to come out again this year. The second runner.
They already did the first one.
Right.
And now it's the second
one. I'm going to probably try to play through both of those again. The first one's way slower than the second one. The first one's like, cool mech design, slow ass game. Second one, mwah, really good. I also played that Hydro Water Sports R. Different thing. It's a track and field game. I don't know. I took that meeting because we thought it might be a FromSoft game before
Correct.
We knew whether or not it would be. And I just like went. I was like, you know what? I don't have anything else right now. And the E3 show floor is fucking empty. There was nothing to do on that floor.
Literally nothing to do.
There's like
Well, I was
going to
say, it's not empty. There were a lot of gamers.
There's people.
There's a lot of gamers.
But there's nothing for those people to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're chasing swag.
I'll say this. It actually feels less filled than last year when it was a fucking train wreck to go anywhere. It felt like PAX on the busiest day last year, where like I just couldn't move. But at least last year there were some games to play on the floor. This year it's like Indiecade has some stuff, and I have not seen anything else where you're not waiting in a long line. So it's hard for me to understand what I'm supposed to do if I was coming here as with a gamer pass. What would I be spending my time doing besides going to see like some of the talks at the Coliseum?
Yeah, Coliseum seems like a big improvement,
but I could watch those from home, right? So, why am I here?
The reason you would go to a PAX outside of that kind of thing is the social interaction, and, like, E3 does not have that part down very well. There is no tabletop section. There's no after night, you know, if you're not invited, like, the random person coming to E3 with a gamer pass does not have an invite to the Fortnite party, right?
You
know, like, there's no, like, there's just not a lot of culture around E3, and it's, like, trying to be an event that it's a waste of money if you are. I mean, I get the appeal of like, I want to go to E3. I get it. Like,
how much is a pass? Does anybody know offhand?
It's a lot.
It's not cheap.
$250.
Oh
says
my god, really?
That is not worth $250.
No, I love that Cyberpunk demo, and I would have gladly, as a consumer coming to this place, and somebody who's not in the industry, would have waited in line to see that demo.
But you can't.
But wait, yeah, you can. There's definitely a just wait in line.
Is there?
Portion. Yes, yes, yes. That's why there's always all those people out front.
Yeah. Like,
there was definitely a fan entrance for too. I would do that. That's worth it. But that's one thing, and it's not $250 good.
Right.
Well, I heard you talk about
LA Rob speaks.
It might be. But only if I had a lot of disposable income. A lot. And only if I could make do it. It's $250 for the whole weekend.
Full week.
The 3 days. No, if I could do like $50 for a day pass, I think maybe go see a cool talk, go stand in line for Cyberpunk, go stand in line for Spider-Man, maybe call it a day. But I don't know. Anyway, other thing I saw was another disappointing thing was Galaxy Variant S. Galaxy, the Dimensional, is a game that I like a lot. Obviously, it's mechs. It's like 1980s anime inspired.
From 17-bit, the folks who did Skulls of the Shogun.
Yep. Yeah.
I wanted to like that game more. I did not particularly care for like the roguelike part of it.
Yeah.
I would have far
so,
preferred a.
So, in some ways, this I should be here saying everyone should go play this game. So many people I know hated the roguelike part of it. I liked that part, but I get where you're coming. Where people are coming from who want handcrafted levels with specific enemy design and like enemy layout and bosses. This is a game with like 100 levels, right? It's also a game where you can't transform between the mech and the ship mode.
Wait, what?
You pick one or the other.
Oh, boo.
Your grappling
hook.
It's
based on the mobile version. The Switch version 100%. Is not a port of of the game on PS4 and PC and presumably Xbox One.
Yeah.
It is a port of a mobile version, which is why Gung Ho, company is behind it.
I am so bummed about it because there is a world in which even I could be like, yeah, totally, I'll get with a one without the proc gen stuff. There's stuff here on paper that's rad. Like, there's more upgradability with your mech and your ship. Like, there's like little bonus robots that are sort of like astromech droids from Star Wars that can kind of give your stuff bonuses. But like, not. So here's another thing: is like your missiles and your grappling hook as the robot are on a cooldown, like a pretty long cooldown. And it's like, that's not what this game is. It got rid of one of the vectors of dashing. It's not what that game is. Like, that game is supposed to feel so fast and fluid, and like, it's supposed to have a pretty high learning curve, and then when you hit it, you become balletic.
Right.
And it just doesn't have it. It's just like, yeah, you hit a B to dodge, and like, that's it. And it's not you don't get that same those same great sweeping motions. So that was a real bummer for me, because like, I would just love to have Galaxy on Switch. Like,
right.
Give me that game on Switch as is. I get
in
why.
In challenge levels, I would have been, that would have gotten me to buy the game.
Yes, a version of that, the other game's feel and look and presentation with this game's, like, or with a structure.
Yeah,
totally. I think would be really great. Or a Galaxy that has just, a lot of people like make it a Metroidvania, make it something like that.
Right.
I think that would be really cool. So, you know, 17-bit, I get why you made that deal, but I think it's rad that it runs on phone at all, but it's frustrating that the structure doesn't do it any favors. Anyway, right. Those are the big things I saw. I saw Dying Light 2, but let's wrap back around with you for that. Rob, what did you see today?
Well, I finally took my pilgrimage to Cyberpunk.
Ah, thank you. To Night City.
To the mountain.
Yes, I went to Night City.
Great.
Which is very bright.
It's so bright. I'm so happy they actually did that.
I tried to sneak in. It didn't work.
No?
I met Jeff Green awkwardly as I was like really trying. I was like, oh, my coworker, he's right there. I was just, you know, and they're just like, no, no, we're busy. And I was like, I get it. And Jeff Green's like, oh, hey, we know each other on Twitter. And we had this like hilarious moment as I'm like standing in the doorway with my backpack.
As Jeff Green goes around you to go to the demo.
Yeah. He was like, he apparently really fought for me. He said he like really fought for me. Like, oh, this girl's important or something. And I was
like, sounds like Jeff.
I really appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you.
Jeff's a good guy.
Wonderful alternate father to me.
Really good
He's
guy.
Great. He's great.
Anyway, sorry. You went. I tried to go.
You'll go tomorrow.
I'll go tomorrow. I'll make a second pilgrimage.
You should send an email. One of us will send an email.
We'll send an email. Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about your pilgrimage to Cyberpunk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, definitely it like lost some of its punch because we talked about it a lot yesterday.
Right.
And the like expectations got set super, super high.
Yeah.
However, it's a damn good looking
game.
I don't know. Like, there's one detail that like sticks out in my head from the way the demo opens, which is that it opens as you're running through this like tenement house hall on this on this rescue mission you described yesterday. But it feels like it feels very lived in. Like, there's an old woman who comes to her front door and like leans out because there's kind of these people running down the hall with guns, and she starts like looking out at you and like starts to ask like, what the hell are you doing? And your character, as she runs past, just like motions that woman like really quietly, just like, get back in your house,
right?
Go back in. And it was a really cool thing. It felt like you are a disruptive force
right.
in these people's lives. Like, you are chaos breaking into places where people still live, and you're the person with the gun,
right? That is going to be such an important thing for them to hit. We've talked about this. I have written about this with regard to Watch Dogs 1 and the way that it represents the projects, right? It has a segment based on the – fuck, what is the name of the projects in Chicago that it's based on?
Oh, Cabrini Green.
The Cabrini Green projects. Yeah. And renders it as just like this hellhole of sexual assault and like constant – like there aren't – people living
as
lives
though, as
there.
Though like the Iraq War is playing out.
Right, I mean, literally, they yes, absolutely. And also, as if every bad thing that happens in Chicago happens there at once. Right, no one there is going to school. No one there is cooking Sunday dinner.
There's no humans.
There are humans, but there it's only humans on their worst possible day, and this game has to stick the landing on, like, no, there should be human. There should be people who are living their lives day in, day out, everywhere, next to, and sometimes slipping into becoming the people who are stuck on their worst day. Or having a really good day, and you're, like, interrupting it, you know? So, yeah, that's a really good detail.
Yeah. I love the architecture. I love that there's a flank move that basically plays out because you got onto a fire escape mm-hmm. and cut around to the next apartment over mm-hmm. and shoot through that window. Like, it feels very much like... A hard thing to evoke is the idea that you are a streetwise operator. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to put you in the shoes of somebody who has years, decades of, like, local street knowledge and such. And I could see this being a game that if they reward that, if you start to become really familiar with, like Night City and right. how it's laid out and how neighborhoods are laid out in your buildings, like... various ways you could sort of seize home court advantage in this totally. In this world. Speaking of seizing home court advantage, the other thing that I found really enticing and entirely inscrutable was the hacking interface.
Oh,
when you,
yeah.
When you jack into one of the enemy squad members' rig, and you haven't just jacked into their rig, though. Right. You're actually plugged into the entire
local network, I guess? Like, are they equivalent of, like, a LAN?
Yeah, it looks like you've got... It's a very hard to parse interface. It looks like there's actually a lot yeah. on it. Like, you go into, like, two or three submenus, and that's when you see just the squad that this one dude is part of. But that node, if you move a couple nodes up, it looks like there's a building-wide network. Yep. It looks like there's all the mercs that you're up against are on that network. And it, like, gave me this little, like, again, like, this little, like, you know, pinhole glimpse into what hacking might look like in that mm-hmm. game if you fully go down that road. And it looks like you might be playing like an entirely different game.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Like how you change you up.
See, Danielle, the grin is just like
playing
smoothing,
a different game.
Moving along your mouth. It's
immersive
great.
Sim.
Yeah, yeah, like that stuff seems so cool. Awesome. You see anything else today?
Yeah, so I saw Metro Exodus.
Oh, awesome. We talked about this briefly during a Periscope earlier.
Yeah, and I have complicated feelings about that demo. I think part of it is that is a game, that is a type of game that I think is going to have a hard time demoing well. Because, I mean, when I think about, I was because after we Periscoped earlier today, I was sort of still working through my reaction. When I think about what I really love about those games, it is sort of long-form immersion. It's how the story sort of unfolds.
It's spending 30 minutes walking around like some sort of weird underground town, looking at children playing, the ambient dialogue, flipping the... Do they make you play in English?
Yeah, and that's another... Yeah, we're going to talk
bullshit.
About that. Bullshit!
Play that game in Russian.
yeah, and so you're sort of dropped into the middle of kind of an out-of-context encounter. And then, if you really want to get through the demo, you probably just need to rush forward and play it very much very much unlike I ever play those games, mm-hmm. right? It's all forward momentum. It's all, pure aggro in a lot of ways. That's not how I approached it. I decided to just play it but basically like I would.
Did you go through all those So, there's a point in this demo where you get to a boat, and it's like, oh, take RTM. There's a person with a light in the tower. Go over to them. And I'm like,
I gotta look into these derelict shacks.
1 second, yeah. There's houses half underwater. There could be one bullet and a sandwich, an old sandwich in here.
But it would recover a little bit of health.
Probably. I looked through all those fucking houses.
Yeah, I was.
I didn't find shit.
Oh, I found a lot of stuff.
What'd you find?
Equipment for you can field strip all the weapons.
That's
take
huge.
Their mods.
That's
so, you
so useful coming off of Metro.
Yeah,
where like you had to go to
a workbench,
and there weren't workbenches in the world. The way that the old Metros worked, you kind of went from place to place.
It was a vendor,
and there every once in a while you get to a kind of a city, like an underground city, and there would be a vendor there. Being able to be like, oh, actually, I want the suppressor from this gun that I found off of an enemy, and the magazine I already have on this gun, and combining them is like such a obvious correct step.
Yeah.
But it's also where I'm like, oh, thank God they fucking did it.
Yeah. So I did like that stuff, and the entire like crafting system actually seems like it could be pretty cool for the way you play Metro. There's a lot going on in that controller now. That is a very busy controller interface. The shoulder buttons are carrying a lot of weight on their shoulders, I guess, because like you use one, and then basically your entire controller is remapped while that shoulder button is being held down.
Gotcha.
Interact with some menus.
Did you get to where the kind of Luddite church
is? Yes, I did.
Okay, what do you think of that?
Got a very strong old school BioShock feeling in a lot of ways, good and bad. The fact that it seems very on rails through a lot of that sequence, the funnel is very narrow.
It's narrow, and like the whole space isn't narrow, but the funnel is like this walkway around the edge and then up and then around and then back down.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that bothered me is that at that church, it feels like, here's a space in this world. But you get there, and actually it's more like a catwalk in the world that wraps around the church. Mm-hmm. The church implies a thing.
Right.
But you never really get to explore it.
So my demo was not time-constrained the way yours was, so I had, a lot of time in that space. My demo was also on a TV that was all fucked up, and, we tried turning off all the motion smoothing, and it was still fucked up. But I did get to – that whole place, I either killed everybody or they gave up in the middle of the gunfight and retreated. They were just gave up. They were like, no, I'm done, don't shoot me, which was cool. It was a cool touch. Again, they felt like people who were I'm not going to die. I don't know who you are. And I did get to kind of explore a little bit more. There were, little huts on stilts and, on a dock, kind of a dock-based town attached to, not town, town's too big, a little tiny village attached to the church where you could go in and talk to people. And there was one person there who was like, they say you're the devil, that you speak to technology. Take me with you. Make me your apprentice. And you're just like, I got a gun, I guess. We have a train. I'm not a wizard. And that stuff was cool. And there's a little bit to the internals of here's where the kitchen is. Here's where they store stuff like that. But they're just I think I saw all the interior. There just isn't much to it. It is, and I think this is partly why it worked for me is it's a big empty symbol. People flock to a church and there's nothing there for them. It's a guy saying that all technology is evil and will kill you. You know, not just evil is a sin. So that stuff worked for me mostly because I was worried we wouldn't get it at all. I went to that demo worried that my favorite thing about the Metro that I've played is the different civilizations, the different little towns and villages, and we're leaving the Metro behind. What if there aren't people out there? So just seeing anybody was nice.
There's another implication that I did kind of dig, which was that it's a Luddite cult, but he actually doesn't have any muscle himself. He is relying on muscle from a local garrison near him that he's sort of conned into treating as sort of the headman of this community. But they kind of they're kind of friendly with him, but even as you overhear the soldiers' dialogues when they show up to deal with you on his behalf, they're also kind of a little bit sketched out by the community and the colony and sort of the things they're hearing. So it was an interesting dynamic, but then at the same time, there's frustrating moments where, for instance, I decided to go the stealthy route, but there was a guy nearby that I had a clear headshot on. I had my silenced pistol. I shot him pretty close range back of the head, and he just went ow. And he was like, oh, there's an intruder. And
get him.
I'm standing there
Croft!
This just happened. And then I empty the rest of the clip in him, and he just is utterly fine.
Weird.
And that was
Oh, it's so spongy. That's such. I'm trying to remember if I had that problem with the previous. A little bit, I guess.
The weapons, but it's different when you're the humans, if you got a headshot, they still pretty much drop.
When you're fighting some sort of weird, werewolf creature, all right, whatever.
Yeah, so it was again, that was kind of a weird moment, too, where it's if the enemies go full bullet sponge, then a lot of the immersion and the sort of danger and precision of this world, such as it is, I think goes away a little bit. That said, it's a gorgeous, big, non-linear sequence and area.
Yeah.
I did some good exploring. I found a crashed airplane.
Yes.
Where, they had gone down trying to reach civilization from some other survivor's holdout.
Ugh, that's good.
Yeah. And that sounds cool. They'd left, okay. They left an audio log. Find some audio logs out there.
That's a plane. That's a real thing on a plane. Yeah. Exactly.
But it wasn't just like the plane. It was like this entire, there's actually a chain of like little story vignettes leading away from the plane.
Oh, I missed these.
Yeah, no, the people survived the crash. Ooh. And then they tried to get out, but they got stuck in that swamp, which is surrounded by monsters.
Yeah, did you fight them? Did you see the big swamp monster?
The fucking, the gator?
The gator.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you find the guy who saves you from the gator? Who's just like another, like,
God, he does not shut up.
He doesn't shut up. He just like, there's a moment where like this big gator gets you. And then if I'm remembering, almost gets you, you're on a boat. As other ranger or Spartan or
something like that. So, yeah.
Whatever the fuck they're called. I know he wasn't holding a beer sitting in a lawn chair, but his entire vibe was like, it was just like, Artyom, it's a gator. Get out of there.
Bang, bang.
And just like kills the gator, helps you out. And he's like, oh man, you get to go on all the adventures. I just get stuck here with the beer and the
And he
chair.
Just keeps talking, by the way. Like over the course of that encounter, you do realize like, oh yeah, this is why nobody like lets you do anything. Like he's like, man, Artyom, like, I don't even think they like you. They always complain about you, but they always send you on these missions. They never send me. They're always like, hey, you go wait by the water for Artyom and just like see if he needs help. They didn't expect me to do anything. I don't think that's fair. Just once I'd like to go out and see some people. There was this girl I tried to impress because I'm a ranger. But I'm a ranger who doesn't rain, so she wasn't impressed. It was really sad. It made me really
like,
upset.
Word for word.
And like eventually I just walked away. And he just continues to like sort of just like talking about back and he's like, see Artyom, it was actually pretty good.
Wow.
Cool hanging out.
Yeah.
Come by again.
But then also in that swamp, you do find you know, like the journal that you find that they find in the Mines of Moria, sort of recounting how the entire party gets slaughtered. You kind of find that for like the group that survived the plane crash.
Ooh.
I think they're the group that survived the plane crash. They got stuck in the swamp and like didn't know what to do with these monsters. So they just started like burning safety fires to keep the monsters at bay, but they didn't know how to move out. And so it's this slow, like this long journal entry where like one by one, somebody's like, I gotta go. We just gotta get the fuck out of here.
And they try to make a break for it.
Yeah, some do, some don't make it. So
sounds good.
It was pretty cool.
That's the Metro I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like this morning I was much cooler on it. And the English voice acting is not very good. And I don't think the writing is very good for it. So that's the other issue is like a lot of these characters are much broader than I remember them being in the previous games. So that is a definite concern because if like it's delivered this sort of ham-fistedly, then that's going to be an issue for a game like this. But the more I've thought about it over the course of the day, I think the Metro that I want is probably still in there.
Yeah.
It just doesn't show in a demo.
Imagine playing 2033 and Last Light and how you even would demo those games. You would demo the action sequences. I mean, in our heart of hearts, we'd be like, no action. We're going to put you in a town and you're just going to talk to people for 30 minutes. You're just going to get a vibe for like this world.
I mean, that's the thing the Cyberpunk demo did do.
Right.
It started with action. It ended with action. But there was like 30 minutes of talking.
It found a way to do
why it was
all
so
those
good,
things.
But
and
we didn't have hands-on and they weren't showing that. That was a demo that they could guide and keep you excited by talking you up and be like, oh, this cool thing is happening, don't worry.
Right.
Whereas, yes, if you're, I get it, you're right, you sit down, a random person at E3 from an outlet who maybe got assigned this by an editor who's like, I guess you go see this. Like, you have to focus on the action.
You see how it happens.
But.
Finding those notes about a downed aircraft and then dying in the swamp is like, okay, that's good. The Metro.
Was that a Hereditary?
No, but.
Oh.
God, that movie. People should see Hereditary.
Natalie had a reaction to that.
Did
Natalie
you see Hereditary
like,
yet?
She might not be liking the...
I don't think she appreciated it.
Oh, it's just a sound
it.
Thing. Gotcha. Yeah. So, all
fun.
Right. That's next year. They got pushed from this fall to next to early next year.
22nd.
God damn it.
It's one of those.
Just consider
it
the bounty from September through...
Oh.
You know, because it's a 2-2-2.
It just hit me. I 100% didn't get it until just now. That's what it is.
It's 2-2-2, and we're talking about all these 2-2s.
All those 2-2s. All those sequels. Cool. What, anything else? Oh, you saw Total War.
Yeah.
Three Kingdoms.
Indeed.
A period of time that I like a lot.
And continuing an E3 2018 theme.
That I like it.
No, but just like...
A lot.
Ghost of Tsushima, but also
East
like...
East Asia, yeah, sure. Yes.
Just, for whatever reason, there's something in the water for...
East Asian stuff, mechs.
Gay. I'm not saying this is gay, I'm just saying. Gay is one of the pillars.
Yes. It is one of the pillars of E3 2018. Yes, 100%. Let's talk Three Kingdoms. Let's talk Total War. What was your demo?
It was a fortress assault on Lubu's stronghold at Xiapi.
Yep. So Lubu at this point has killed his father figure, Dong Zhuo, after being seduced by Diao Chan, who was, you know...
He's a dupe?
Oh, Lubu?
Yeah.
Complete dupe. That's the whole character. He's like... His whole character is he's like the strongest person who's ever fucking lived.
Yeah.
Killed hundreds of people in battle, like that, even in the romance of the Three Kingdoms anyway. But is a complete fucking dupe and is being manipulated by this rising tyrant. And then they kill the tyrant. And Lubu is like, well, fuck that guy. They don't kill the tyrant. They push the tyrant out of power. And Lubu is like, fuck you, fake dad. Kills him. I'm going to be the one in charge now. And he can't do it. He's not a leader. He's not a leader. He's not a politician. He's a warrior who is a good horse named Red Hair.
And the horse comes up in this. Name.
Does it? Yes. Yes.
So, this is the battle where Xiao Tiao has sort of created an alliance that's finally going to put down Lubu once and for all. And this was, I didn't expect to get this excited off of this demo, and I also didn't expect it to demo this well. They're showing a castle assault, which if you watch the Thrones of Britannia, closure stream, I guess we'll call it, Total War has had a lot of issues with fortress assaults over the years, and I still hesitate to say they've sort of licked those issues, but... They felt really confident in just letting the scenario run and showing how it all plays out. I don't know. It's
what worked for you about this scenario.
It's for one, it's just a gorgeous game, but also the scale and the epic sweep of it is also supported by the way the armies move and interact. Like for instance, as the armies advance on this town, some of the walls are already breached. Trebuchets are like hammering the towers. Troops are lining the walls and waiting for the assault to begin. The archers with the attacking army start firing flaming arrows like super high into the air. Like, and you can pull the camera back, and it's like a river of fire through the sky, like raining down on the city, which is beginning to burn. And previous Total War games have like zoomed in the action and cut down the ranges and made a lot of these battles feel like very small events in a lot of ways. And this was one where I'm looking at it and it looks epic. It looks enormous. The other thing is there's just a lot of little quality of life improvements. It's way easier to keep your troops in the proper formation. They fixed how that ends up working a lot. The way formations move has changed a lot. With Rome 2, a lot of creative assembly games have probably gone too far down the road of like making kind of a fetish out of their mocap work, where they really want each battle to, if you zoomed in, be a lot of dudes like pairing off and fighting each other with like these little scripted canned animations. But what that's led to is it doesn't feel like armies are fighting in formations anymore. It feels like two armies sort of run into each other, and then it's just a giant scrum with people doing like dance moves in the middle of it. It doesn't feel convincing. The formations are a little stickier. They stay a little more clustered. It all feels a little bit more like military. Like it feels like combat of this period kind of should feel. And then there's just some really cool ideas. For instance, the city layout isn't just a canned city layout, a map, like every previous Total War has like had pre-made city maps that you're fighting on. Here, the city layout kind of changes based on what you've built, apparently. And like if something gets fucked up during an assault, it's gone.
In the strategy layer. So like if you have a barracks or even like a blacksmith that's making your units stronger metal spears, that can actually cause some lasting damage.
Right.
Does that happen even if you win the... So let's say I'm invading a neighboring province and I fuck up their blacksmith or whatever and I lose the battle. Does that damage still last?
Yes, it does.
That's cool.
So they were like, look, if you attack and trash part of the city and then retreat. You don't win the battle, but the damage sticks. And if you have reinforcement armies arriving, like, you can basically resume the siege. And now the enemy is weakened because now a critical building is damaged. You know, now the breaches in the walls are basically wider.
Right.
So
that's, is that new also? Huge wall holes?
There was some of this in Attila. They're calling it, like, the siege escalation system.
Gotcha.
Other, like, Warhammer, Thrones of Britannia have definitely had... They basically made it about, like, moving big battering rams and siege towers into place.
Right.
Now it's more about, did you lay siege for long enough to actually undermine walls?
Gotcha.
So, there was some really cool stuff there. And then there's some really bold ideas. For instance, there's, like, a MOBA element to the... Like, the duels thing feels super MOBA-ish.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you got the, you've got these hero units running around, your officers. And at a sort of pivotal point in the battle, I think Zhao Dun goes and
he's one eye. He ripped his own. He gets shot in the eye with an arrow. This is a myth, but it's in the game. He gets shot in the eye with an arrow during a battle, and he says, like, depending on what thing you're reading or watching, he rips it out and he says, "An eye is little to use for the beautiful world that my master Cao Cao will create," and then eats it and throws it down. And then the army that shot him is like, "Yo, fuck you, I gotta go," and they retreat.
He ate the eye.
His own eye. He's
was
dope.
It delicious?
He's a scimitar in Dynasty Warriors.
Was it yummy?
I don't think so. I don't think so. No, I actually bring that up because, like, we'll talk about the duels in a second. They did tell me when I played this that events like that will happen in this game if you set it to mythical mode.
Right.
And you also set it to historical mode, where he's a guy who gets shot in the eye and then he goes like, "Ah, my fucking eye!" Ah, and he gets hurt. And then, like, later he'll come back with, like, an eye patch on or whatever, but, like... That's, like, it's the historical version versus the romance
that's
version,
a funny
the epic version.
Giving you the options.
Yeah, it's good. Anyway, so he rolls up.
Yeah, and so he, like, taunts Lu Bu out of his stronghold, and they have a duel. And the armies sort of pull back while these guys fight. And you can just let them fight while you go manage the rest of the battle. Or you can apparently micromanage the battle and, like, tell your champion basically to use, like, his super abilities
move.
And shit.
Yeah.
And it was kind of silly, but also kind of cute. I don't know.
Yeah, it happened for me in a weird way where I sent Zhao Dun to fight one of Lu Bu's other dudes. And while that duel was happening, we just routed the rest of his army. And so it ended up just being Zhao Dun by himself with this other general by himself off in some alleyway somewhere while the rest of us were sieging the final center area. Literally, like, a 7-minute or whatever, a 5-minute in-game walk away. It's like, just stop fighting. Why is this general who doesn't have an army anymore even engaged at this point? They're, like, fucking shadow boxing each other. They're, like, playing Street Fighter over here while Lu Bu is actually getting fucked up. And, like, I wish it was a little more, like, context aware at that point. But it's neat. It's definitely... It feels true to the history, and specifically true to the mythologization of the history, and so that's cool.
Yeah. So the last thing is, like, apparently the officers, like, they sort of taunt each other and chat amongst themselves during these battles, and apparently that is affected by the relationships they built over the course of the
game.
Cool. They tried to add sort of a nemesis system type relationship.
Finally, someone else adds.
I know.
Yeah, so, like, if you have two officers who, like, just don't get along in an army, apparently, like, you might run into loyalty issues because, like, you're still the boss, but you've created, like, a shitty team and they hate each other. And the final thing is, apparently, like, with this siege battle, apparently they've tried to really retool the AI so that it... like, fights more defense in depth and is better able to keep its eye on, like, the real key locations of the battle and where the main fight is, and isn't quite as liable to get lost outside the city walls, get lost on the city walls, walk
inside
a battering ram
wall.
Down a road and then not know what to do with it. Like, hopefully that will actually be fixed here,
cool.
But who knows.
Awesome. All right, we should take another break, quick one this time. Maybe tag some folks in to talk about other stuff, and then we'll come back and talk RE2, Rage 2,
mm-hmm.
What else do we got going on here? Yakuza Kiwami 2, Danica.
Yeah.
Awesome. And some other stuff also. So we will be right back.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we are back again for our second, almost a third day of E3. Tomorrow's a third day. Today's
that's
the second day.
That's okay. I tweeted E3 day three.
You did?
Okay. I did.
That was the voice of Danica Herod also joining us, Natalie Watson.
Hi, hi.
At the table to talk about games that they saw today. What'd y'all see?
We saw, I'll start with the first thing that we did this morning. I saw a tweet made by Yakuza Game, at Yakuza Game, that was like, hey, you can get a free Majima eye patch if you come by the booth.
Did you get one?
So we went immediately to Sega.
Hell yeah.
Immediately, and played.
Was Majima there?
Majima was not there, but he was in the game.
He must have been busy. It's fine. He has a lot going
on.
He
was there on the TV.
He was there on the TV, and
he was looking hot.
A mission. Yes, he was. We played a story mission in Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Cool. Was it a Majima mission? Because I know they added a bunch of Majima
stuff, right?
Right,
so they had, which I was very surprised. I opened up the game, I opened up the menu, and it was like Kiryu storyline or something. And then the second option was Majima Saga.
Ooh.
And
that sounds big.
Majima apparently has an entire story in that game, it seems like.
Is it a follow-up to the stuff in Zero? Like, is
yes.
Are key characters there?
So he... I think so. I can't tell because he mentioned some characters who I don't remember or maybe haven't been introduced yet.
Sure.
It's hard to tell. But apparently there's going to be a Majima storyline.
That's exciting.
I'm excited about
it. Did you get the eye patch?
I got the eye patch.
Why aren't you wearing it?
Maybe I'll wear it later.
Okay.
Maybe I'll wear it later.
We're going to Giant Bomb.
So.
You show up with that eye patch on. People will know.
Hopefully Danielle's like butt isn't sweating when we go to Giant Bomb.
No one who's listening
actually,
to this podcast knows what that's a reference to.
Hopefully her butt is sweating. Leave it alone.
I want Danielle's butt to sweat on the couch. I'm going to have my butt sweat on the couch.
Yeah.
If
butts,
I don't...
Butts be sweating.
Butts be sweating.
You know?
Sweat. One cool thing about Kiwami 2, I just feel like the Yakuza team keeps improving on the fighting style in that game. Mm. Like, I feel like 6's fighting was a big improvement from Zero and Kiwami, and now with Kiwami 2, they've improved it even more. Everything feels like faster and feels like I'm actually fucking dudes up as
nice.
Compared to like
when you played Yakuza 2 for a while.
Yes.
And you tried to stream it notable improvement.
Yes. Yeah, it still has that backwards kick, which like
oh, that's a good kick.
Isn't in any of the other games.
Yeah. You know, it's just like some gameplay design was like, I have the best fucking kick idea in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna put it in this game.
Finally, I've been keeping this one in a notebook for years.
The backwards kick.
They've been studying horses. And then we saw Annapurna, and we saw Donut County with Tom and Outer Wilds. Two of those games I have played and talked about on podcasts before, so I'm
curious.
Donut County and with Tom.
So
I'm curious to hear what Natalie thinks.
Yeah, the first game I played was Donut County, and that was I like watched the trailer for it on my way to the convention center this morning, and that's probably the game I spent the most time on while I was there, and definitely like spent too much time.
Well,
I blame that
on Ben, the developer of the game. Ben Esposito came over, and then Natalie was like having an existential moment with Ben for a while.
Yeah, we had a very long. I wasn't like recording anything and I wasn't like interviewing him, but I was just so curious about, where did sort of like where was the point of origin for the game? Because it has sort of this really quirky story about this raccoon BK who, if you don't know the story, has this like app on his phone that like has been causing these holes to open up all over the town, and mm-hmm. he's kind of like very like nonchalant about it, and is like, oh, you know, my actions have consequences, question mark. And what I was joking about with Ben is like, wow, like I got that like immediately. Like that is extremely like what it feels like to be online in terms of like just like, it's like this, there's like the circle of townspeople who are all trying to talk to Ben and like, and or not
or BK.
Talk to BK and like talk about like, no, like the things that you're doing, like even though they're like through this, he's just trying to get like a high score in this app. Like these things like have real world repercussions. And so we had this long conversation about that. And then I also was asking him about where he's been before. And he mentioned that he worked on the Bubsy Goes to the James Turrell exhibit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I had no idea that he did that. And I played that last summer while I was an intern at Waypoint.
What's that? I don't know. Okay.
It's like this.
Before she was 18, she was interning.
Oh, okay.
It was a whole another era, but I wanted to like write about that game because I remember writing down so many of the narrative quips and like sort of like a bunch of like the random encounter text like that comes up in that game, because it was just so funny to me, and it was like very funny, especially like exiting academia or like mm-hmm. academia at that point, or like starting to exit. So I just had a really good time with Ben, and then playing Donut County, and then Danica and I played Watam together.
We played Watam, and it was very interesting because Keita Takahashi, the Katamari guy mm-hmm. who made Watam, was just like there helping us and standing behind us and like laughing at us, not making fun of us the way that he made fun of Patrick.
That. He just like wants his demos and just cackles.
He tried to be the boss, Keita. He didn't help us.
He cackled.
He was very helpful to us.
The only time he helped was when we glitched the game.
Very helpful.
Like, same. We broke that game. Like, two, it's full. It was unplayable.
I broke it last time I played it, too. There's just, multiplayer has a lot of bugs in it.
And he, like, told
us that,
like, before we started.
Don't
even
worry about it.
He was like, I don't know if you want to play multiplayer. It has a lot of bugs. And Danica and I were like, fuck it, let's play. And then, like, at one point, like, a little poop was, like, this, like, tiny, like, little dot.
The poops flew off the map.
They flew
off the map.
Wait. You have to explain for people who maybe don't know what Watam is, why there are poops flying off the map.
So basically, you start off as you're introduced as the mayor, and you gain control of this like block, this green block-like character with this like very cute top hat, who's sitting on the ledge of this like square platform, and he's like, "I'm so lonely," and he's crying, and then he looks over and sees this tiny little rock, and he like picks the rock up, and the rock like becomes animated or becomes like personified, and they hold hands, and then you like move to the next level. So like
the whole purpose of this game is like interacting with basically every single little character that pops up on the map to make new things happen, mm-hmm. And bigger things keep happening and keep happening and keep happening until a mouth pops up on the map who eats the characters and then poops them out, and then the poop have to
stack
and turn gold, and then
it's thematically similar
first
to
they have to get
in a lot of ways.
It is very similar to Katamari.
Yeah,
like,
but it's like it can do stuff other than like there's a growth element to it, or like bringing new things in. But it's also
can I ask you a quick question? Like, what do you think of when you hear the word inflation?
Like generally.
Yeah, just like if I say the word inflation, just like what comes to mind? Do you feel good about it, or?
Well, if it's a boat, it's a good thing. It's a boat.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying it's good.
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, if it's the economy, it's a different thing.
Okay, it's good.
Here at Inflatable World, inflation is...
Patrick would be Mr. Wacky.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so it's all about these characters making friends and like growing, and it ends with the way that the demo ends, which you didn't get to experience, is like all the gold poops get flushed and it goes until you become the sun and like Yeah. They added stuff since I've played, which is cool.
It was really fun. It was, I wasn't expecting to have to figure out as much as I did. Like, it was, and this is something that happened with Donut County too, which I was like, oh, I was like in the first sort of couple minutes playing these games, I thought I was going to be just like moving through and like my attention wasn't going to be called as much as I like anticipated. And I was like, oh yeah, video games have progression. Like, yeah. That's.
And the person who made it is sitting there just watching you.
Just watching us.
Stuck on a puzzle.
He was very, every time we got stuck, he was like, oh, you have to do this. Yeah.
And he was like super, he wasn't like making fun. He was very kind about it and like was realizing
not
that like.
Me. Wow. Well, that must be nice.
Well, We also learned that him and his wife did the music, which is very cute because the music is great.
The whole vibe of that. What are you talking about? Donut County? You're talking about Wadham?
Wadham.
Both of those games have the best vibe.
And then we played Outer Wilds, which is the one that I haven't played before, which is exploring space on like a 22-minute time loop.
Yeah.
You have unlimited time to check out this little village that has alien, like alien looking characters, and you learn that you are this like space explorer who has never gone out into orbit before, and you have to go out into orbit to find clues about this species who I guess went extinct or nobody
right. like, who knows?
Really knows
yeah.
what's going on with them. And you kind of just take your spaceship and go planet to planet, making different things happen and getting different environmental clues on how to tackle the other planets. And it's very interesting. My demo ended when I encountered a planet where I landed my ship and I didn't find anything. And then I got back in my ship and I started flying around and I flew into the center of the planet, and it was like a fog mist, and I actually felt scared for the first
time.
Yeah,
like, that game can actually be a little like
right,
frightening.
I was not expecting that, and so I'm flying through the center of this planet with all this fog, and all of a sudden, a huge anglerfish just like comes up out of the fog and starts to attack me and like eat me, and that's how my demo
that's wild.
Ended.
So I did this in at PAX, and. I did one run. I landed on the moon, and I do you do the first thing, and
yeah.
it's like, oh yeah, you can read this other language
right.
now. Cool. And then I went to this floating like construction station or like shipyard or something, and I couldn't quite land because it's just like a space station in
the ship is also kind of hard to.
It is. I think it's like meant to be. So
right.
I was like, fuck it, it'll stay in orbit. I'll just jump from here out of my ship in space.
That is very Austin Walker
so
to
I
do.
Land, so I land on the construction
yeah.
station. I make a pretty good jump. I explore it. It's cool. Like they're building some shit. Like not just at the construction station, but like somewhere in the solar system.
Yeah.
There's no. This is like a handcrafted single solar system with like six planets or seven planets
yeah.
and a bunch of moons
yeah.
and stuff. It's
yeah.
really cool. And so then I'm like, all right, cool. I'm done. Where the fuck is my ship? And I see it's super far away. I'm like, well, I have a jetpack. I can just push in the general direction. Like, I'm in space, right? So if I just start pushing.
I've seen every space movie where this just doesn't
So it
work.
Didn't go well.
Right.
And so what I realized is the space construction center that I was part of, the space like port that I was or whatever that I was next to, is in orbit of this giant gas giant. So I was like, all right. I guess I'll just descend into this gas giant. I guess I'll die in the center of this gas giant. And the same thing happened with like passing through the fog or like the kind of cloud cover or the top layer of what I thought was a gas giant. And then I punched through to the bottom and it was like an ocean planet that was like all green skies. And I just like crashed into the water and I'm starting to like swim around. I'm like, yes, cool. And I realized like, oh no, like I'm out of jet fuel, but that's okay. It's still letting me move around. And I realized it's letting me move around with my oxygen. And my oxygen I can use as a propellant. And so I'm like, I have to find something on this fucking planet to get me off. And I see in the distance something bobbing in the water. And it's a copy of my spaceship. It's another one of my spaceship. And I get close to it and I scan it. And it's like, oh, that's like Beatles spaceship or whatever. It's like another character. It's another one of my alien species spaceship.
Right.
I get over to it with no oxygen left. I don't even have enough to get up on top of the spaceship to even see if I can get into it. I think the dev said like, oh no, that's like, it's a destroyed spaceship. But I'm like, oh, please let me in. I was like, die, wake back up in bed or whatever.
Yeah.
It was a really cool experience. Yeah. And it was a very like, that was like, I love the little 22 minute cycle thing. So I like the idea of piecing together the history of that solar system over the course of a bunch of different play sessions.
Yep. Yep.
So
yep.
That game looks cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are there dates on any of those yet? Does anyone remember?
No. Donut County is supposed to be this year.
Okay.
Wadham feels like it's been supposed in development for to like be 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And also Donut County's been in development for a very long while too. So yeah. Who knows?
Cool. Well, those all sound good. Yeah. Anything else? Annapurna.
Call of Ass.
What's I Call of Ass?
I called some ass today.
Ooh.
And I went to Call of Duty.
Okay.
And I played Call of Duty Black Ops 4, the multiplayer. There's like these two. For those who don't know, I became a Call of Duty fan last year when I was gifted by a friend World War II. And I've.
Wow, you were gifted the war.
I was gifted Ooh. A war.
Wow.
Hell of Troy over here.
You know, if only. But I. So I and I got I like became like obsessed with the zombie mode of World War II, and I've obsessively played it. I've beat it like several times, and it's really really fun and something that I like just love to do to pass the time. And so I went to the Call of Duty event today, but I didn't really I played multiplayer on World War II like a few times, like enough, and I was like, I just don't I don't really want to do. I don't want to do this.
Yeah,
like,
that's just, a relatable feeling. There are other first person multiplayer first person shooters that I would want to play in that time.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And for me, I want dynamism. I want something that's constantly changing. I want, mm-hmm. and I will say that Call of Duty is extremely fast. Like the multiplayer, you're constantly.
You're talking about World War II. You're talking about the new one.
Both.
Okay.
Just multiplayer mode in Call of Duty is extremely fast because you're constantly dying, and I am. and so that that's can be discouraging, but is also engaging in a way. So I played the new, there's these two, they showed us two, multiplayer modes. The first is sort of the classic, it's 6v6, I think
that's right. Yeah.
Five maybe, where, you're just both on one map and it's whoever gets the most kills wins and the time limit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one they showed was capture the point, where you have a point A and a point B and one team's defending and the other is trying to capture. And so my team won everything. I was the...
What class did you... Because there's heroes. There's almost Overwatch-style heroes.
There is Overwatch-style heroes, but I was given no explanation of how to use them. And the people, to my... I was on the end, and everyone to my left was I think in one big group, and they were all COD fans and really knew what the fuck was going on, and so they're like, I'm going Ranger, I'm going tank. I was and then I ran out of time and was a random character.
Great.
And then so I had no idea how to use any of my abilities, so I used none of them.
Good. Great.
But I will say that they looked interesting. If I had known how to use them, that would have been...
That sounds like one of those demos. It's that feels like a demo that's for, is that what E3 is for the people with gamer passes, I've watched all the Black Ops 4 videos.
They know what they're getting into.
Well, you're not going to wait in line for Black Ops. That the gamer line for Black Ops 4 was 3 hours, and you're not going to wait in line.
There was a line for everything. Was like right. Three
That's
hours.
So
you're not
going
to wait in line to play a game unless you're
right.
Unless presumably you already have a main, heavily even invested, you've never played,
or you can watch you can watch those videos in that 3 hour line.
Right.
Yeah.
They should have that. They should have that set up like an amusement park. Ride line, or
yes,
the media park ride lines,
TV.
And not have the little TVs
in the waiting
stories.
Room, in the waiting area for the media people, there is a little TV that was explaining some of the specials, but it was just
mm-hmm.
talking about the abilities, not telling you how to use them.
Right.
And so, I will say that I'm interested in that, and maybe, but also I didn't see any of my teammates really using those abilities either. So it wasn't very present in terms of while I was in gameplay. I didn't really, it wasn't in.
Right. You weren't seeing it in a way that was otherwise you would have used your abilities. You
I would have figured it out. Right,
everybody's using this.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm at a disadvantage.
Yeah, it's not quite Overwatch in that way, but.
Yeah.
Some of them are pretty cool, and some of them are also just completely optional.
Yeah.
Every character class has a special grenade that only that class has access
yep.
to.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are just going to turn that off and choose a regular grenade anyway.
Well, that's the confusing part, is because the first, when you first jump in, you right. select your class, and then you choose your primary, your secondary weapon, and you choose your
Perks. It's like
you choose your perks, you choose like your armor, and then you choose your grenade or like throwing axe or whatever your sort of, I forget what they're called, like weapons of war or something. I can't remember.
It's like a special ability weapon for your character.
No, but that's before the character.
No, so but then, one of the options is, it's like grenade, flashbang, like utility items, right? And then one of them is the one that's good for my character, the one that's my hero.
No, because you don't select your hero until after you do your class. One of the options
is whatever special thing my hero has.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That is. Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It is that.
Yes. Because that, so then you go on.
But that's what is like confusing to me, being the first time I played it and presumably the first time a lot of people played it. Like, why would I, like, if I had no idea that there were these, like this next sort of character selection coming and that there would be, you know, a special like ability with that, why wouldn't I just like, I didn't make the connection and maybe that's
it
like.
It does not. It they should have tutorialized that better for players at this event who are like, I've never played this new one. Or the thing is, like, this isn't how Call of Duty normally works. Black Ops 3 had a similar system, but like hero characters are not a thing in Call of Duty multiplayer games by and large. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it would, even I, who like sat in the room where they yelled at us about it for an hour, you know, even I was like, okay, wait a second. Why would I pick the hero special before I know which hero is going to be available for me to use?
Exactly.
Because if I'm stuck using the person who has, like, I want to use the person with the medic thing that lets me heal people or has the cool grappling hook.
Yep.
I don't want to use the person who has the shield right now. So I don't want to go in with blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, like, you can change your class once you start playing it.
Yeah, that's true.
You can change that stuff. So I get it. And I think once you know the workflow or, like, the game flow, you'll be fine. Because you'll build sort of weapon set and ability sets per, or lined up with certain types of characters you want to use.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, that's not a great demo experience.
Yeah. I felt very in terms of being able to like just play the game and get through the matches, like I was fine. But in terms of like doing things that were supposed to be unique to this new game, I was like completely lost. Yeah. So, and there were no zombies, I understand why, because I would be sitting there for 2 hours playing that.
Also, they haven't revealed a whole lot about it.
They haven't. I know that.
I thought that would happen. I thought maybe E3 would be a place where they would show anything new. Maybe they've shown some stuff new that I haven't seen, but I thought they would show the zombies mode, one of the zombies maps maybe, or
they've like teased about Battle Royale. They've teased them, and then they've said that like a lot of the old maps are coming back.
Yeah,
they like doing their own thing.
I know they do. They do. Why bother? I get it. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But. So that was Call of Duty for me. Cool. It was fun to win. I think the other team had maybe were not the greatest of Call of Duty players. Wow. And I definitely
Codders.
Codders. Nice. COD of fish. Mm-hmm. And I definitely had the lowest KD ratio on my team, but I had the highest versus the other team. So that felt good. So nice in terms work. Of
that's all right.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I can get by with this. But it was chill.
Rad. All right, Patrick.
Hey.
How was your day? You do okay, buddy?
I'm tired.
We got to go be on another camera.
That's fine.
Speaking of being on another camera, Rob, can we switch mid-pod?
Hot swap.
Hot swap.
Got a hot swap coming.
Oh, hot swap.
Hot swap.
Hot swap. It's a hot swap.
Coming to you live this year on Viceland. Hot swap.
Hot swap. Hot swap.
Swapping. We hot swapped. Ready? That was a bad clap. Better clap. That's for you, Danielle.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes. The main games. Well, we checked out Dying Light.
We did. We checked out Dying Light. Zombies.
Zombies.
Zombums.
Choices.
Zeds. Zs.
The new Dark Ages.
The new Dark Ages. Zombies have come and taken over the land.
Yeah, the...
Winston Churchill.
Yeah, it was kind of Winston Churchill. That was a little weird.
A dark side.
Right. We'll fight them on the beaches. The zombies. We'll fight them on the shores.
Don't watch that movie.
Is that movie bad?
It's so bad.
I mean, fuck Winston Churchill. Anyway. Zombies. New Dark Ages. Parkour.
Yeah, it looks like Dying Light.
I think
cool melee combat.
Yeah, what I was looking more from that demo was like, hey, Chris Avellone is, you know, like the lead writer or like, you know, big creative consultant on this game. Was mostly curious to see like a deep dive into like his influence into that game. And you get some choice stuff, but it didn't go nearly as deep as I was hoping. We actually got that from the interview. The stage demo and then the demo we saw. The demo we saw was just like a longer version of the stage demo that like, sets up.
A water tower for the community of survivors.
And you either choose to align with like these thieves like at the top who have taken it, or you kill them. You know
what? They're not thieves. I'll put this out there. They're not thieves.
I guess no one had it. They had it.
They had it. They were the ones who had it. The peacekeepers show up. I don't know if this was in the trailer. Peacekeepers show up to negotiate, and they kill the peacekeeper. He falls out a window.
Well, that happens.
Right.
It's high.
Defenestration. It's a word. It happens.
And, so this one, in the way the demo is sort of set up, is like, oh, well, if you align yourself, you know, if you end up killing these folks, then the peacekeepers take over the water tower. And if you don't, then you get to go into business with these folks and you get a cut of the water they start selling to the community. In the longer demo, we see like some of the additional consequences. Like if you align with the peacekeepers, then the like water fountains in the area start working. And then you can use those to get like additional health.
There's other stuff too that was kind of neat, which was like the heavy armored peacekeepers have have hook systems all over the place to transport their armor.
So you don't have to do the parkour to get up.
To parkour, instead of parkouring. And another thing I just realized, it just came to me, is next to the black marketplace so there's a big black market that sets up, and there's also like your little water market that you've set up. And near the water market is a truck driver, and then the back of the truck it says drive. And I bet that's fast travel. I bet you might get fast travel from going the other way. Anyway.
Yeah. And but at the same time, the peacekeepers are this authoritarian, like very much like eye for an eye. Like if you steal something, like we're gonna cut your arm off.
Yeah, the rule is like steal once, you lose the hand that you lose whatever you took you stole with. Steal twice or ever steal food, you die. We'll hang you in the street.
And you hear like some ambient dialogue. It's like, hey, did you hear about Ted? And like he stole something, but like I don't think he did it. Like there was no trial, and he just took his arm off. And so like this is a real like. They live on force, like they execute their quote unquote justice through force, and they don't seem like it's not a great situation. Like, yeah, there's water, but everything else kind of fucking sucks. So every time you like drink that water, you're like reminded, like that's the choice I made for these people.
I guess I fucked up.
And then the other way around is that like it sets up this big black market. They quote unquote said like chaos is introduced to the area. It's not really clear.
What I saw was fireworks.
Yeah, maybe people having fun.
Maybe. Perhaps.
Fun is chaos, apparently, in dialogue. You don't get a good sense exactly of that. They don't go as far down. But in the interview, we ask, like, all right, well, like, what leads up to all these choices? Is it really so binary that it's just, oh, like, the shitty authoritarians or, like, chaos and black markets? Like, oh, no, like, there's, like, a whole lot more that leads up to that. Like, for example, you can do some side quests that what you'll find out is that, oh, like, the reason the peacekeepers are so bad is because of their leader. Oh, if I go down this side quest, I can find out who that leader is. Oh, if I continue down this side quest, what if I can do regime change and I can put in a new leader? So if you decide to go down the peacekeeper route, maybe they're not nearly as bad as they were before.
Right.
And that layer of choices sounds like more interesting than the binary stuff.
Well, they also said that some of that stuff would happen after a choice. So you could like make a choice and be like, oh, fuck.
The peacekeepers.
I got to fucking work this out. But he said at the same time.
There was a moment. So you align yourself with the peacekeepers and then you're at the top of the water tower, and then there's one of the peacekeepers just like hanging out this ledge, and the game just pulls up this icon that says push.
Just push him.
He's just hanging
People
out.
People fall from high places every day.
And the guy that was doing the demo had fucked up a couple of parkour sections, and so the person who's doing the VO says, you didn't earn this. You're not allowed to
just
push
load
him.
The other game's load.
Which made me think maybe there's another version of that where they push him and then cut to the other side of the demo. Yeah. But it makes me wonder, like, how is the game tracking that? Like, if you were to push that character, is that a choice that is then tracked by the game, or does that just, like, temporarily, like, put people on alert for you? Like, what level are the systems operating at? Well, and this demo didn't get into that kind of
thing. There's so many questions I have about the systems of this game, because on one hand, I think it very clearly in this demo delivered on the kind of moment-to-moment system stuff. The parkour looks really fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the melee looks pretty cool. There's lots of like dodging back, rolling back. There was a dodge back where you fall, which is really cool, where he like dodged once, dodged twice, and like lost his balance and fell backwards.
When you're crawling around the world, if you look down, your character then actually puts his hands on the ground and like starts moving. It's like a nice little touch.
Yeah, and I think it definitely delivers on. We saw daylight stuff. We didn't see any night. They didn't show any night.
I also don't remember if the lore works the way
it doesn't. 100% doesn't. So something's changed.
So in Dying Light 2, there's actually like a vampiric element to the zombies, and so they sleep during the day. And so some of the best places to get loot are these places called nests, where the zombies go in to these areas and they sleep. There are just like 50 zombies just sleeping away.
Like standing up like cows. It was terrifying.
It's extremely creepy.
Was it the like special zombies?
No, this is all zombies. Oh yeah, that is new, because
they don't do that.
So they say one of the ways to like the daylight dynamic works now is that you actually want to drag zombies into the light, because then they only turn into the shambling slow zombie when they are exposed to sun. It's a really interesting, like, neat idea, and this actually makes sense given the fact that we asked, like, you know, what was it like to bring Chris Avellone in? Like, what were some of his contributions as an external writer coming into your team? He's like, well, we really didn't think about the lore in the first game. Like, he was very honest about, like, the story was an extreme weak point. He's like, the Bible for Dying Light 1, he said, was maybe a page and a half. Chris Avellone came in and was like, let's sit down, let's figure out what this world is, what are the rules, what is the logic. Now we could publish a book, which is like, of course, makes a lot of sense. Like, well, go read this Rock, Paper, Shotgun interview where they interview Chris Avellone about the backstory of like all the pilots and Into the Breach, which so little of that is communicated in the game itself, or it's inferred.
But it's inferred, and it allows for the writing there to feel flavorful.
There's a Bible that informs the writing that's there, and it's just it actually makes the zombies like a really cool sort of relative to other zombies and other zombie fiction.
We should note also that Avalon's not the only writer on the team. They brought in some CD Projekt Red people,
specifically
the Bloody Baron quest writer is also involved. I know that's a quest lots of people like. Bloody Baron is one of the names of a quest that comes up in a way that very few names of quests come up in the world of video games. So that's interesting. I also just want to say that, like, I think I really want to see what night looks like, because what they were suggesting was you don't want to be inside at night because that's where the zombies go to sleep, but you do want to go there at night because that's where the cool stuff is. That's where you scavenge. But, like, there could still be zombies in there, but they'll definitely be outside at night.
So they're definitely going to be more powerful.
Right. And that sounds fascinating. So I'm really curious to see.
It sounds like the other reveal later this year will be, like, the nights out there. Like, there's...
And, like, multiplayer, because they didn't talk multiplayer at all. Or how, like, shared world stuff works, right?
Yeah. I didn't play nearly enough of the first one, but I'm excited to, like, jump on with...
I'm really glad to hear that there's a little more happening with the day-to-night cycle. Because the first one, basically the only incentive to push through into the night, which was very dangerous and very harrowing, but basically they gave you like an XP buff for how long you spent outside the wire. Yeah. So that was a game that kind of encouraged you to play the boring, safe version of Dying Light, because night was so dangerous that it was... better just to do it during the day.
Like the nest, they were saying, like, well, some of the dynamic were like, those are the unlooted areas. You're going to find like the best stuff to pick up there. But if you do it when they're nesting, well, you've got, you know, 50.
There's a creatures. Moment where you're just hanging from this, from like the rafters looking down at 40 or
and you,
50.
And you originally walk in and you think like, oh, there's like six or seven, like this is bad. And then, you hang from this rafters, look over, your flashlight goes over, and there's just like 45 of these like hulking creatures just going...
In this, like, retail store. In this, like, clothing store.
It's haunting. Yes,
it's good. It's good. It's a good moment.
So, you can still loot those areas while they're sleeping, but that is precarious because if you wake them up, then you are surrounded by all these creatures.
Right.
Whereas you go at night, they're not going to be there anymore, but they're going to be probably the bigger, more hulking creatures will be kind of working their around. So,
all right. Yeah. So you saw two other things. One of them is post-apocalyptic. One of them has zombies. I mean, I bet they both have zombies, actually. Which direction do you want to go in?
Very quickly, I'll touch more on Resident Evil 2 tomorrow or Monday. But I played Resident Evil 2. It looks like Resident Evil 2 in like a really good way. Like Resident Evil 2 is like a, as we mentioned earlier this week, like as a touchstone of like me growing up and like my understanding of horror and like the kind of games I really like. And they didn't show enough to let you know how much is fundamentally changing.
Right.
It's staying weird. Like, you know, you're still collecting medallions, and for some reason a police station has a spade key that, like, locks the upper levels.
Police have shit to hide, okay?
Yeah. Well, true. This, usually they're a little more conspicuous about it.
Yeah, true.
Not just, like, a fucking spade key, and, like, go find the spade key, and also, like, this big statue in the front of our police station, like, just find those three medallions.
That's way more effort than most cops go to. Like, true. No, my body cam didn't work. Don't know what happened
to drugs. Yeah. I put tape on it, I guess. Whoops.
Yep.
But it looks gorgeous, and it's grotesque, and I, as a series fan, I'm excited to see, like, how they reimagine, like, the character designs. So, like, the zombies are a huge leap, so, you know, how the liquor and the other creatures look, I'm excited about. But otherwise, Mega Man 11.
Liquor.
It's the one that's, like, the, it crawls along the ceiling. It's got the long tongue.
L.A. Rob comes out.
Oh, you were...
It was liquor.
So it has long tongue and L.A. Rob comes out.
Yo.
You also saw Rage 2.
Moving on.
Avalanche Studios.
Yeah.
How was that?
I didn't mean to do that. That just happened. And I'm like trying to own it. Like, I meant to do that, but I didn't.
Rob's like a little upset at himself.
Yeah.
It's been at waypoint.
It's okay, L.A. Rob.
Rage 2.
Post-apocalyptic.
Yeah,
you shooting cars? You get to drive around?
No, so weird, interesting demo. So the like the gameplay demonstration they showed at the showcase that Bethesda had, they didn't show the powers till the very end. But suddenly it was like, oh shit, like you're like sort of a superhero, or like you have some sort of augments. That seems like an interesting wrinkle to the combat. The whole combat scenario I played is that section, but with powers straight up front. Like, you have one where you can jump up and stun, one where you kind of push people away. You have a really nice dash that you can use, like, cool, all the time. The actual, like, moment-to-moment gunplay feels really fucking good. Like, okay. I don't know if I'd go quite as far as, like, Doom level good, but, like, you can tell that id Software has worked with Avalanche to, like, figure out your shit.
But you had to say that. You had to... Doom is in the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's how good it is.
The moment you did the left trigger, right trigger, it's like, oh, like, this feels all...
But it is a left trigger, right trigger game, unlike... Yes. Was Doom left trigger, right trigger? It could be, but it didn't matter.
No, I don't think I ever. This is right trigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is right trigger. There's no zoom and there's no scoping.
Yeah. Or there might be a scope.
I don't think so.
There's no weapons that have scopes?
I don't think so.
In Doom?
In Doom?
Yeah.
I don't remember a single scope.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Good on Doom.
There's definitely like an aim down sight, but I don't know.
If I could aim down sight for that pistol. I definitely ADS. I definitely ADS that pistol you can charge up.
Because I
tried to use it for way too long, and I was like, man, fuck this pistol. I got a shotgun.
Fair.
Anyway, does Rage have... Rage does have aim down sights.
Does it have aim down sights? Like, the combat feels really good.
Because, like, we talked about that trailer, where at the end, it's like, oh, and you have cool powers.
Yep.
What are the powers?
There's one where you, like, jump up, and you, like, kind of stun down, and it kind of does an area effect thing. There's one, like I said, you can dash, and there's another one that's sort of like a force push sort of thing. And you also have, like, the... I want to call it the wing stop. I definitely know it's not called that.
The wing stop?
Yeah, the wing stop. The, you know, the thing that you throw.
Wing stop.
The wing stop.
Arr. Does wing stop have Bahama Mamas, or is that Buffalo Wild Wings?
Buffalo Wild Wings.
We should go to Buffalo Wild. I know we've eaten good. We've eaten not so just well.
Are you saying it's time to start eating like trash?
Tomorrow, we should go to a Buffalo Wild Wings.
We can't do that, but we could go to a Hooters.
Yeah, it's across the street.
We should waypoint like last meal together, just be everyone in a Hooters.
I've eaten at that specific Hooters. It's all right.
Can we?
Their wings are okay.
Do they have Bahama Mamas?
I don't know. We can find out.
Okay, let's find out.
They got something there. They got something for everyone there.
Got something for everybody.
But no open world stuff whatsoever, which seemed... It's nice.
That's so weird.
It's nice they were able to confirm, like, hey, the gunplay is good. But, like, for me, I was less worried about... Like, I could have dealt with mediocre gunplay as long as, like, the open world stuff is really interesting and, like, you know, serviceably wild. And you got no driving in cars, no going around the world. And that game's spring 2019, so it's a ways off.
And, again, I think that there is a degree to which I sort of feel like... I think if this were the Dying Light demo, the Dying Light 2 demo would be a highlight demo if I had not played Anthem yesterday and seen, and seen Cyberpunk yesterday. Right. And so now it's almost like, well, I want to see the whole loop. Show me the whole loop from every other thing.
Yes.
And we're like, let me touch it. Let me play. And it better feel fucking good. And so, I mean, it sounds like this was Rage 2 is in an Anthem camp. I'm like, yeah, it feels really good, but I still don't know what the actual flow of the entire game is. So,
yeah.
Cool. All right. I think that's it today. think we did it. Was there anything else? Let's take a look. Let's take a look at the list.
We can do that stuff tomorrow. None of it's big. I can talk about Mega Man 11 tomorrow.
No, I think Mega Man 11 we'll talk about tomorrow.
Fine.
Everything else here, we talked about. We did it. We talked about some video games today, which is a good thing because we have to be in downtown LA shortly.
What are we seeing tomorrow?
What are we seeing tomorrow? I'm seeing Hitman 2, which is exciting.
Austin and I are seeing Lego Super Villains.
Villains 2. You might also come to Hitman. You should come to Hitman also.
I'm going
to
interview the down. Rage developers.
All right. Awesome.
I'm going to talk to Sam Lake.
I'm going to interview a Nintendo Reggie tomorrow.
A Nintendo Reggie?
So if you have questions for the Reg Dog, you should send them over to me.
What's his moveset in Smash going to be?
His up smash is he just throws a cop. You remember the evil Reggie?
Yeah.
Side, he's like, brah, he just throws one. He has another one where he hits you with a
Waluigi
pizza.
For an hour.
He just and then humiliates him. Yeah. He just steps on Waluigi. That's his, like, taunt. He's a taunt. Stomp, stomp, stomp. I'm Reggie. I hate Waluigi.
Wapo.
Wait a second.
Wapo.
Is Wapo the WoW version of some other post?
You didn't see the Washington Post article.
No, I did.
For people, we should.
Wapo.
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 Okay, this
classic Waluigi.
Wapo.
We've driven into a bit and we can't get out.
I'm stuck in this bit, Rob.
Wapo.
So basically, like, HuffPo is like the
right,
normal
is
basic
the regular one,
and then, like,
WaPo is the WaW version.
Yeah.
WaPo. Right.
It is a Bezos, so. Yeah.
HuffPo ain't better. That shit's all fucked right now, man.
Serious Sam 4.
Okay.
I'm actually curious to see.
Yeah, especially coming off of Rage.
I saw the screenshots, and it looks like they're going for a hyper realistic sort of look, which seems kind of fascinating.
With Serious Sam?
Yeah. Ashen, and mm-hmm. then I'll be briefly on Kind of Funny at like 3:15 cool. or something like that.
What do you got, Rob?
Rob, what do you
got? Rob, I see a big block of red here.
Oh yeah,
focus home, baby. Right,
you got this for fucking. What time is it? Why do you have this? All right, so I want to be clear.
He's just going to breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Focus Home Interactive.
Normally, you have like. An hour-long slot, maybe a half-hour-long slot. Sometimes you maybe do an hour and then like an interview after, so you block out for three or like an hour, hour and a half, 90 minutes. Rob, why do you have 3 hours in the same place, dog?
Because I'm bringing the focus to my new home. And I'm
it's
just
gonna
going
be
to
be interactive.
It sure will be.
What do they have?
It sure shit
is that
will
Sinking
be.
City?
They've got a Cthulhu game that's not Sinking City.
Oh.
I don't remember anything about it.
Definitely take pictures with the Cthulhus outside the
floor. Are there Cthulhus out there?
Oh, by the way, yes. The zombies were getting more aggro today.
Yeah, those zombies fucking suck, man. I feel like it's a hard job. Shout out to the zombies. They were part of the Dying Light demonstration.
Yeah.
You had to walk past them. They're in the booth. They're like in the behind closed doors. I was like, go to the dark zone.
Hard pass for me.
And they're like, I'm really aggro. I'm a zombie. And
they had a Resident Evil maze that I walked through. Some zombies chased me.
See?
Yeah.
Wow, take that, Dying Light.
It was scary. This one wouldn't leave me alone. Like, I like laughed. I was like, ha, got me. And then like I kept walking away and like it was still like just like breathing on my shoulder. And then I was like, all right, I know this is only like a 45-second hallway, but like I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. What's so Call of Cthulhu game, Farming Simulator 2018? Surge 2? Purge 2?
Surge 2.
Purge?
The first Purge.
The first Surge? I'm not seeing Surge 2?
Did you already see it?
No, because I'm not good. Like, I'm getting nothing out of that fucking, like, look, I can.
I should be
like, is the folk rock music you're using in this game as good as it was in the first game? I remember that part of the game that I definitely engaged with. I've got nothing to bring to that conversation.
Say that when you check into the meeting.
Yeah, Warhammer.
What are you here to see? Let me tell you what I'm not here to see.
Wolves of the Imperium? Warhammer. Imperatus? Nope, that's Paradox's game.
Esposito?
Warhammer Esposito. Warhammer Ben Esposito.
Look, the point is Focus Home brought a lot of games. So many games, we can't even begin to name them all. So
I got email. Here we go. Focus Home. First of all, Call of Cthulhu. Second of all, Modern Insurgency Sandstorm? Is that there?
Yeah.
All right.
That seems
what
like
is
a
that?
Me thing.
Yeah.
It's It's a hardcore tactical shooter.
Just take me away. Show me games.
Focus
Farming Simulator 19. The Surge 2, which
I'm not seeing Farming Simulator. I'm not seeing the Surge.
You should see, you should see Farming Simulator. I did one of those two or three years ago with Vinny. It was the fucking best. Me, Vinny, and Alex went to a Farming Simulator demo.
I will be there alone in the morning.
It wasn't, I'm not saying it was a funny, goofy time. I'm saying it was welcoming and it was warm. And those
you
people,
like Stardew Valley?
Yeah, those people have a deep reverence for industrial machinery.
Take a ride on a tractor, Rob.
Yeah. No. Oh, I'm L.A. Rob. I'm too good for a tractor.
No, I'm just my tractor riding days are past me.
I see. A Plague Tale Innocence?
Oh, right. So there's some rats and shit. It seems pretty gross.
We're back in New York.
Wait, is this like a Fifles thing?
A Fivel?
Fivel.
Fifel?
Fifel. Fifel is it's the singular. Fivel's the plural. One Fifel, two Fivel.
We gotta get out of here.
Greedfall? Are you seeing Greedfall?
You made that up.
No, not because I'm gonna read you the next sentence, which is fucking wild because of the name of the development company. Dive into the latest RPG from Spiders to discover the unique world shaped by the player's political diplomacy, character relationships, and critical choices. That sounds dope. But it does say the sentence, dive into the latest RPG from Spiders.
Nope.
I'm good, Spider.
They've been hard at work.
I'm impressed. I didn't know you did that.
Spiders be making games.
Space Hulk Tactics is playable.
Yeah, that's for sure. There we go. There's the Warhammer thing.
And then Spin Tire and some stuff that's out already.
Yeah.
They got there.
I'm not sure Spin Tires is for me.
No way. Really? That also seems very you.
No. Like, first of all, I don't like dirty. Like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's muddy. It's too muddy. That's going to do it for us today. Yep. I think.
Well, I'm also going to make time to see Fear the Wolves.
What the fuck is that?
That is.
Is that the fake like Warhammer game I just made up?
Type thing.
Oh, the one, the from Stalker sort of Battle Royale.
This is the other Stalker. Oh, it's a Battle Royale. It's a here?
Yes. I was supposed to see it on day one, but apparently their flight was delayed. Now I'm seeing it tomorrow, but I'm intrigued by it because Vostok does have a lot of like the original Stalker team.
Sure.
Or they did as of a few years ago. But remember they made this game Cerberium? And they were like pitching it as it was Stalker, but it was like an environmental catastrophe and all this.
Isn't that still out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but remember the original pitch was it was going to be like a single player game.
Yeah.
And what they released was like the multiplayer module, and then it went free to play, and I think it just kind of.
Is that. I thought that's still in dev.
I have not heard anything about it in so long that I kind of suspect that it might just be drifting.
I feel like I've gotten an email. Maybe they're just not promoting it the way they need to.
Maybe. But yeah, I've not heard anything about Cerberium being a going concern in a while. But that multiplayer module was pretty good. Like, if you liked the way the vibe of Stalker and the way the weapons handled, like, it was a decent multiplayer take on it.
Okay.
This is them kind of going for a dedicated game around that kind of system.
Okay.
I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do.
Cool. Heads up, Greedfall, the game by Spiders, looks dope as shit.
It sure Hell fucking yeah. does.
I remember who Spiders is. Spiders, they just did some magic. Spiders made, like, Mars Prison Diaries or whatever. Do you remember that? It's like I see Greedfall. It's wild. We're watching it on the phone.
Man, after Joe Pesci killed him, I really thought that God heard the last one.
It's going to do it for us tonight. If you're watching this live on Periscope, thank you. There are so many other things you could be watching. You could have been anywhere else in the world tonight, but you're here with me, as Jay-Z once said. We're going to be heading over to a hotel in downtown Los Angeles to join up with the Giant Bomb folks in just a little bit. So you should go tune in over there. Say hey to them. Say like, hey, say, I heard y'all have Funko Pops. What's your address so we can send you those?
If people have forgotten,
please
get your Funkos.
Get your Funkos.
Wrap them in piracy reference materials.
Right. Some sort of good book about the age of piracy.
Send them to
I ran
Bob.
Into Dan today,
uh-huh.
and he was like, well, I knew about pirates. I just didn't know they stole anything.
Saying that now.
I knew about them. I was like, I asked him a question that everyone had on mind. Danielle can vouch. I was like, what did you think modern pirates did? And he's like, well, I thought they did bad things. And I knew they were bad guys, but I didn't know. Like, well, one bad thing is stealing.
Even though modern pirates existed, they gave me a little bit of hope.
Right. That did give me some hope. You're right.
Yeah, he said he did.
He said he did. He said he did. Danielle's shouting that he did. He said he did.
How many times are we going to end this podcast?
Well, that's going to do it for us tonight here at E3. Thanks to Bone and Leslie, User Dragon. You go to the EP mail machine and find out more about that. Waypoint.zone/BOEN. I'm also Rob Walker, Zachney. Rob Zachney, Patrick Klepek, Natalie
Watson.
On Twitter?
Natalie Watson.
On Twitter.
Yep.
Liquor.
Later.
Peace. Bye. We Gucci.
A little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.